What's the bonfires?
The bonfires represent Torah. The reason to have bonfires is because Torah is symbolized by fire, which is about, it's the fire of Torah, the warmth of Torah, the brightness of Torah, that it provides clarity. So therefore we have these bonfires. That's the idea behind the bonfires.
Thank you.
Okay, moving along in Yoshua and Joshua. We finished off with the mission of the spies. We had the two spies, and we discussed that over the past couple of weeks, their mission and their encounter with Rahav. And then they went back, and so now they're ready to cross the Jordan River. And so they're going to cross the Jordan River in this chapter. So we'll read through it, and we'll make some comments along the way. Vayashkim Yehoshua Baboker, this is starting from verse 1 in the third chapter. Vayashkim Yehoshua Baboker, Vayis'u Mehashitim, Vayavo Ad Hayardin, Hu V'chol B'nei Yisrael, Vayilinu Sham Terem Yavoru. So they got up, Yehoshua got up in the morning, and they traveled, and they reached up until the Jordan River, him and the entire Jewish people, and they stayed there. They spent the night there, and they didn't cross yet. And then it says in the second verse, Vayihi Miksas Shloshas Yamim, Vayavru Hashotrim Bekarav HaMachaneh. So then they were there for 3 days. And then the officials, the Shotrim, went around the Jewish camp, and they started telling the Jewish people the following. Why 3 days? Why do they have to wait for 3 days? Anybody remember from the first class whether we had three there also?
To prepare themselves?
To prepare themselves, yeah. Preparation is... Yeah. We had that in the first chapter. Preparation was for 3 days also over there. And we have, in general, 3 days. Where else did we have 3 days than we discussed last time?
Esther.
Or the first class, Esther had 3 days, and also when we got received the Torah, we had to prepare for 3 days. That's what we addressed in the first class. So here also, there's a number three here, that they waited 3 days before they began their activity to cross the Jordan River. Verse three here, Vayitzavu es ha'am lemor. And what did they tell them? They told the people, Kiroschem es aron bris Hashem, Eloheichem, v'hakohanim v'halevim nosim oso, v'atem tis'umim komchem, v'halechtem acharav, ach rachok yihye b'nechem, uveinav, ka'alpayim ama b'mida, al tekruvu elav, l'man asher teidu es haderech asher telchuba, ki lo avartem baderech mitmol shilshom. And he tells them, this is how you have to travel. When you travel across, you have to make sure that the aron is in the front, the aron which contains the Luchos, it contains the Torah. So that travels in front, and the Kohanim are the ones that are carrying it. And then you have to travel behind them. And you're traveling behind them, and you're following them, but you have to have some sort of distance between yourself and the Aron. 2,000 Amos.
That's such a distance. It's huge.
How long is 2,000 cubits?
I don't know the exact number, but...
it must be close to a mile.
Is it a mile?
And how do you follow it?
I don't know the exact distance of an amma, so I'm not sure if it's a mile or not. But it has to be at a distance. It's a far distance. And you cannot get close to it so that you know the way to go. The Aron will go first and then you will follow, because you don't know where you're going. This is the first time that you're traveling into the land of Israel, so the Aron has to go first. A few points here on this pasuk. Yes.
Well, it becomes obvious that if there's, number one, if there's such a great distance between, it's not so great that you can't see the Aron HaKodesh.
I mean, they must have been able to see it.
But
yeah.
Secondly, how did the Kohanim know where to go? The Kohanim carrying the Aron HaKodesh, how did they
That's
know
a great question. That's a great question.
The Aron.
I assume that there was some sort of miracle that took place, that they were following the Aron. Not all the Kohanim had Nevuah, no.
They have a sense of direction from Hashem.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question.
I assume
there was some sort of miracle. Because of the Anani HaKavod, So they didn't have the Ananiah. Once they go into Eretz Yisrael, there's no. They didn't have the Ananiah covenant anymore. It was only when they were in the desert. They lost that once they go into Israel. So if you turn the page to page 2, if you go to the bottom source on page 2, which is, I didn't number the sources, but it's the last source on page 2 from the Talmud. It's from the Gemara, and the Gemara in Sota. It explains how this is different than usual. The way they're traveling now is a bit different. Turn the page. The other here. Over here. Tana Rabbanan. The sages taught us, Ketzad Avru Yisrael Asayarden. How do they cross, how do the Jewish people cross the Jordan River? Which is what they're about to do. How do they cross the Jordan River? B'chol Yom Aron Nosei Achar Shnei Degalim. The Hayom Nasa Tchila. In general, when they would travel, every other day, the Aron would be really in the middle. When they were in the camps, the Aron was really in the middle, in the center, and that's how they would travel. They would have half of the Jews in front, half of the Jews behind. Or really, they would be all around. But they would be in the center. Today, the Aron was in the front. So the Aron was really carrying the rest of the Jewish people. They were going in the front. As it says, and it quotes from our parak, it's a few seconds later in our parak, but if you turn the page, it says, Hine Aron Habris Adon Kol Haaretz Over Lifnechem. The Aron travels in front of you. The Aron will travel in front of you. And the second difference is, B'chol Yom V'yom Levim Nosin Es Aron. In general, the ones that carry the Aron were the Levim. The Levim, those that come from the tribe of Levi, they would carry the Aron. Today, but when they crossed the river, V'yom Nasu HaKohanim. The Kohanim now were the ones that were carrying the Aron. Shenamar Vaya Kenoch Kapos Ragle HaKohanim Nose Aron Hashem. So it was the Kohanim that would be the ones carrying the Aron instead of the Levim. The rest of the time the Levim were the ones that carried it, and the Aron was the one that was going first. And then finally, the next, there's a few more lines. Tanya, it's also taught, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Rabbi Yossi says, Bishlosha Makombos Nasu Kohanim Es Aron. There were three times where the Kohanim would carry the Aron. Only three times in history. Kisha Avra Es Hayarden, when they crossed the Jordan River. Ukisha Hesibu Es Yericho. Then after they crossed the Jordan River, we'll have this in very soon. They surrounded Yericho. They were walking around Yericho before they conquered Yericho. Yericho is the first city that they conquer. And then finally, Kishachziru Lemakomo. When they returned it to its proper place, when they returned the Aron to the proper place in the Beis HaMikdash, when they built their Beis HaMikdash, their temple, their permanent temple, so when they placed it back in the Beis HaMikdash, that's when the Kohanim brought it there. They brought the Aron. They were the ones that were carrying the Aron. So this time period is very unique. It's very different than any other time where the Kohanim are the ones that are carrying it and the Aron is going first. What is that trying to teach us? Why do we have the Aron going first in this case as opposed to any other time? In general, the Aron was in the middle when they were traveling. Over here, it's going first.
This is a holy mission and God is leading you.
Yeah, so excellent. So it's clearly showing that this is not just a war. This is not just, you know, let's conquer the land of Israel. This is a war. This is something spiritual. This is something where we need the Aron to be in the front. Even though this will become a physical war, but the Aron goes in front. The Aron represents Torah. So that while we're having the physical war, we also have to realize that this is guided by the Torah. So the Aron is the one that's guiding us and going in the front. In general, when they were traveling, it was in the middle, because that's the center. So it makes sense that when they're traveling, it should be in the center. But over here specifically, it goes all the way in the front to tell us that this is how you have to go. You have to be guided by the Torah as you travel into the land of Israel. So our very first steps into the land of Israel, as we cross the Jordan and as we surround Yericho, both of those times, we have the Kohanim holding it. The Kohanim are really the teachers of the Jewish people. They were the ones that served in the Beis HaMikdash. But most people don't realize this, but they served in the Beis HaMikdash. They were only there, each Kohen was only there for 2 weeks in the year. They divided it up so that the Kohanim were there 2 weeks in the year. The rest of the time, what were they doing? They were teachers. They were the teachers. So they were the teachers throughout the country. And so they were the ones that were leading the Jewish people. So they're the ones that are holding the Aron at this point in time to signify the fact that the Aron is guiding us. They're teaching us as we enter into the land of Israel. It says here, if you go back to the fourth verse, the one that we just quoted, you're only going to recognize this in the Hebrew. But it says, Ach rachok yiyeh beinechem uveinav. Where I'm going back to page 1, it says that in verse 4 that the Aron has to, there has to be a distance between you and the Aron. If you see it in the Hebrew, it says beino ubeinav, and then in brackets it says beinav, because the way it's written is beino, but the way you pronounce it is beinav. What's the difference between beino ubeinav in singular. Hebrew? Singular versus plural. The extra yud tells us that it's not just one Aron, that you have to have a separation between yourself and the Arons in plural. There are multiple Arons that it's referring to. So it's really referring to the Aron which has the Torah inside. The Aron literally means a box. That's literally what it is. It's a closet. It's a placement for the Torah, and it's in plural. So what other Aron was there? Why? There's only one. There was only one Aron at the time. So why is it in the plural? So they explain, based on Midrashim, that it's referring to the Aron Shel Yosef. Yosef, oh, yeah, who was in Egypt. Oh. So they took him. They took Yosef, who was buried in Mitzrayim. He's buried in Egypt. And they took him out to bring him to be buried in the land of Israel when they left Egypt.
And they carried him the whole way.
So they carried him the whole way. In a coffin, they carry him. So that's the Aron that it's referring to. It's referring to the Aron of the Torah, and it's referring to the Aron of Yosef. And so we have to have a distance between the two of them, which is fascinating, because we have these two, you can imagine these two Arons that they have in front of them, the Aron of the Torah, which is that they just received the Torah, and then also of Yosef, out of the deep respect that they have to have for Yosef, who's really the one who saved the Jewish people. There was a famine, and he protected them, brought them down to Mitzrayim, and he was a leader for the Jewish people, and so they're now carrying him out. There's more to say on it, but so if I have time afterwards, we'll talk about it, if we have time. Let's continue on to the fifth pasuk. Bayomer Yoshua la'am. So now up to now was the shotrim, the officials were talking to the Jewish people. Now in verse 5 we have Yeshua talking to the nation. So Yeshua is now talking. He says, Hiskadashu, you have to prepare yourself. Purify yourself. Ki machar yasa Hashem bikirbachem niflaos. Why? Because tomorrow there's going to be a great miracle. So you have to prepare yourself, which is a very similar language to by Har Sinai. Also we say that you have to purify yourself when we receive the Torah. Uses the same language here with regards to crossing the river. And now in Pasuk Vav, going on in verse 6, Vayomer Yoshua l'Kohanim lemor, Su'u es ha'aron habris ve'ivru lifnei ha'am. He tells the Kohanim to carry the Aron and to go in front of the nation. Ve'isu es ha'aron habris ve'yilchu lifnei ha'am. And they do that. They go and they lead the nation. Vayomer Hashem l'Yoshua, verse 7, Hashem tells Yoshua, Hayom hazeh, today, achel gadelcha be'enei kol Yisrael. I will show everybody your greatness to the entire Jewish people. Asher yedun ki kasher ha'isi Moshe e'yayimach. Just like I was with you, just like I was with Moshe, so too I will be with you. Va'ata tetaves ha'kohanim nosei Aron. This is verse 8. Aron habris le'mor kevoachem ad kitzei me ha'yardein ba'yardein tamodu. And you go ahead and tell the Kohanim, those that are carrying the Aron, tell them that once you reach the edge of the river, you should stand. You should stand by the edge of the river. And it says, "Vayomer Yoshua al Bnei Yisrael." This is verse 9. Geshu heina v'shimu es divrei Hashem Elokeichem. So Yoshua then goes and tells the Jewish people, "Geshu heina." Geshu heina means to come closer. Geshu is not used so often, but it's really a language of not just come closer, but come extremely close. Come very, very close. Yosef uses this language when he's with the brothers. When there's the encounter of the brothers and Yosef, and he's revealing himself for the first time to the brothers and telling them that I am Yosef, that I'm really your brother. At that time, Yosef also says, come close. He tells the brothers to come close, to come very, very close. And here too, it uses the language of come close to listen to the word of Hashem. Now, Hashem didn't tell Yoshua to do this. So it never says so explicitly that Hashem told Yoshua to have everybody come close. This seems to be something that Yehoshua was doing on his own. So what exactly is he doing by telling everybody to come close? So there are at least two explanations that are given, what it means to come close. Imagine the picture. They're by the edge of the Jordan River now. The Aron is at the front. They're now stopped there, so they're all close to the Aron. They only have to have a distance when they're traveling, but when they're just staying still and they're not traveling, so then they're close to the Aron. And Yehoshua tells them, come close. So what does he mean by come close? So there are two explanations. One explanation is that it's similar to what happened with Yosef. By Yosef and the brothers, he also says to come close. Why did Yosef tell them to come close? He had to prove to them that he was Jewish. And so his proof to show that he was Jewish was to show that he had a bris. And so he told them to come close. And they explained that so too over here, there's a miracle which is about to happen, which is, if you saw the title, it's the Jordan River is going to split. Just like at Kriyas Yamsuf, it splits, so too here it's going to split. And they needed to show that there was a reason to have the sea split. So they told them to come close for the same reason, to show that they circumcised themselves when they were in Egypt. And the Levim also, they had circumcision. And so it's also to come close just to show the river, so to speak, that they had this mitzvah, they performed this mitzvah of circumcision.
How could 600,000 or more come close?
Okay, that is a great question. So that's the second answer, it's a great question. So for the second answer, what does it mean to come close? It's not necessarily like the first answer, but to come close means Yehoshua told the Jewish people that the entire Jewish people should stand in between the poles of the Aron. When they would carry the Aron, they would carry it on poles, and he told the entire Jewish people to stand in between the poles of the Aron. Now you're going to ask me, it's more than 600,000. They're really probably close to 3 million Jews at the time. There were 600,000 men. There were 600,000 men, close to 3 million Jews. And he told all 3 million Jews to stand between the poles. That's what it says. And it says that a miracle occurred, and in such a small space, 6 million Jews were able to stand. And that miracle is not the only time that's described. We also have that in the Beis Hamikdash. 3 million. Sorry, 3 million were able to stand. Sorry.
I was going.
No, 3 million were able to stand. That's a miracle of being in a small space and able to hold a lot of people. Also happened in the Beis Hamikdash. In the Beis Hamikdash, when they would go for the holidays, also it's described specifically on Yom Kippur, also that there would be this great miracle where there'd be so many people there in such a small space, and there was a miracle where that small space is able to contain everybody. So Yeshua is telling everybody, there's this miracle, to stand in front of the Aron, to stand in between the Aron as they're about to enter into the Jordan. And this is what he tells them. Verse 10, going on. Vayomer Yeshua bezos teidun, ki kel chai bekir bechem, vahoresh yorish mipnechem, es hakanani vesachiti, vesachivi vesarpazi vesakir gashi hamori vahevusi. He says, from here you will know, Kikel Chai Bikir Bechem, there's a living God who's going to allow you to conquer these people. You're going to know it from here. And now it says in verse 11, Hine Aron HaBris Adon Kol Aretz Over Lifnechem Bayardim. Verse 11, it says that the Aron is about to cross this Aron, which is Adon Kol Aretz, and the master of the entire land will pass before you in the Yardim. Verse 12, Vata kechu lachem shnei asar ish mishifte Yisrael ish achad ish achal lashavet. Take 12 people. We're going to see, not now, but in the next chapter, why he's taking 12 people. Take 12 people from every tribe and have them come. They'll select 12 people. We'll explain what exactly that means in the next chapter, probably next week. And then in verse 13 it says, Vahaya kenoach kapos raglei hakohanim nosei aron Hashem adon kol aretz bimei hayardein. May hayardin yikarisun hamayim hayardin milamala v'yamdu neid echad. And what's going to happen in verse 13? Once you put your feet into the water, the Kohanim will put their feet in as they hold the Aron, so then the water is going to stop. And the water is going to be cut off, and it will only stand on one side. So you'll have the water, it's not really split. By Kriyas Yamsuf, when they passed through the Yamsuf, it split on both sides. Over here, it didn't split on both sides. It all moved to one side. The water all moved to one side, and it continued rushing. It wasn't like just like a wall. That was still, it continued to rush, that water continued to rush, but all the water would go to one side. And that's what he tells the Jewish people. That's what's going to happen. And then that takes place. That ends up happening. All the water goes to one side, and then they're able to travel, which we'll get to in a minute. But before that, I just want to discuss. So this is the miracle that he tells them will happen, and it also takes place, that they'll all be able to cross, and all the water will go to one side. So this is now the second time in history where this will take place. By Kriyas Yamsuf, the water is split into two. Here it all goes to one side, and the Jews are able to cross. The question is, why is this necessary? Why are we doing this? But when they were in the desert, and they were in Egypt, and they were facing the Yamsuf, so it makes sense, because the Egyptians were behind them, and they have water in front of them, they have nowhere to go. So they need the sea to split. By the Jordan River, did this miracle happen when they sent the two spies? How did the two spies cross the Jordan? Like, was this necessary? I don't know how the two spies crossed the Jordan, but I assume it was by boat or something. I just don't know. But I assume it wasn't a miracle. It was normal to cross the Jordan River. It wasn't a miracle to... It could happen.
Two versus 3 million. Like, two people could potentially say, let's get on a raft and go. 3 million,
not so much.
It's going to take them weeks to get across.
Okay, it's a good point. If there's one raft. But people, it seems like people did travel back and forth. It could take longer. I agree, it could take longer. But there was travel, yeah.
If the water just went to one side anyway,
they were walking. It was on one side, and then it was dry on the other side. Meaning,
it did split. So the water.
It didn't. The water didn't split to two sides. It was all the water just went to one side.
Well, how did that help you cross?
Because you have the other side that's dry.
And that's what you still have to cross. Like,
not like.
Like the long way it went.
Yeah, the long way. Meaning here, they are here by the river. Israel's here. So they were walking here, so all the water went to this side. Not like to that side, they went...
So then it is split.
All the water went to this side. What?
How is that different than a split?
A split is that what happened by the Yamsuf is that... What happened by the Yamsuf is that the water went to two sides. So to their right and to their left.
And then there was a passageway in the
Passageway in the middle.
So then it stopped on one side.
And there's a passageway on the other side.
I don't see the difference between those two things.
Oh my gosh.
It's...
Look. Splits down the middle.
Right, compared to?
All on one side.
And you just have the other
path.
Well, the water pass all up on one side.
Water, water, down
the middle.
Even
the water to the left before, of that arrow.
There isn't any.
Even the water what?
Oh, pass before.
Is that the very beginning of the river?
What do you mean that they passed before?
Water,
this is a different...
So it had to have been only on one.
Before they got there.
It explains it a little bit further.
Yeah. It will explain it. But, yeah, the water that was flowing just moved to one side. It continued to flow.
I mean, the problem is the word split. When we think split, we think of chatzi-chatzi, kind of like down the middle. You don't. A split doesn't necessarily mean... Like
all to one side. That's why it's not a split. It's not a split. It went all to one side.
But the title is kind of...
Oh, yeah. The splitting, yeah. Okay. You're right. Yeah.
A split usually means like...
Yeah, yeah. So it's not...
Maybe
it's not
50-50, but 25, 75 or something.
No, no, for sure, for sure. All of it... So you're right. The title is a bit incorrect. But at least this miracle of the water all moving so that they could go on dry land...
The whole thing I just find so impossible to kind of even ever... Like, okay, we're talking about it, but...
Let me ask you a question. You knew about Kriyas Yamsuf, right?
Yeah.
So did you ever ask, it's impossible?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But it's
the Makos.
All the plagues. The plagues. It's the same thing with the plagues.
I know.
It's
crazy.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
It's very hard to imagine. But just like the plagues are very hard to imagine. So.
Isn't there also records of other nations recording
this?
The Kriya Yamsuf.
I think Kriya Yamsuf. I'm not sure about this, but I think Kriya Yamsuf. Yeah. Yeah. So they had the split. I believe so.
And there is some recording. There is some natural phenomenon that can do that, isn't there? Some weather patterns that can cause.
Is that true? That could cause a split.
Possibly, like possibly enough wind can push.
But the wind will push it to one side. I think what's unique.
Not necessarily. It depends what direction the wind is coming from. It's coming directly from the south, and then it does exactly what this is talking about.
I know, but by Kriyas Yamsuf, it's by Kriyas Yamsuf, it went on both sides.
Yeah,
which I think by Kriyas Yamsuf, it was a miracle. It was a bigger miracle for 2 points because it went on both sides. So it's hard to say that how that's natural. You can't have a wind that makes it go on both sides, unless it was like a tornado or something. I don't know, but I prefer to understand that it wasn't natural. That's my preference. Once we're believing that Hashem is doing it, so then why do we have to explain that it's natural? So Hashem is making it split. So that's a bigger miracle than pushing everything to one side. And the second difference is that in Kriyas Yamsuf, the Pasuk says it turned into a choma. It was like a wall. It wasn't even continuing to, wasn't like a stream, wasn't a flow. It just stayed as a wall. It was still. But over here, it wasn't. That was by Kriyas Yamsuf. It was still by Yamsuf. Over here, there was still, it was still flowing on one side. Okay. So it was take two, but it was not as big of a miracle as the first time.
Still flowing on one side? I don't understand.
What?
I'm sorry.
This is a big miracle that took place.
The other side.
Do you understand how Makas Bechoros happened? How
the death of the... I understand Yamsuf. I can accept that. A miracle happened. But here, how could the water keep flowing on one side?
It was a miracle.
It was a miracle.
So it's a miracle, okay.
Yeah. I mean, just like Yamsuf was a miracle, this is also a miracle.
So we're not to understand.
We're to understand that this was God's decision to make it into a miracle.
Thank you.
To get back to the reasoning why they...
So why did this have to happen? Okay, one explanation is maybe practical, which might be the right answer.
Because
I have nothing else to discuss, but...
I've got an idea.
Yeah.
Well, I think both events are part of the same whole. That is, when Hashem splits the sea at Yam Suf, and saves the Israelite people, he's saying, you are my chosen people, I'm saving you because I've got a purpose for you in mind, and you're going to be my holy nation. And when he does somewhat of a similar thing when they're about to enter the land of Israel, he's reinforcing exactly the same thing. I told you then that I was going to promise you that I was going to bring you into the land of Israel and I was going to be with you, and here I am, I'm doing it again.
Okay.
Why did he have to split the water differently then? Why didn't he just do...
Well, it is less of a miracle. In this way, it's less of a miracle.
Once it's a miracle, miracle's a miracle.
Well, different. It's true, but there are different degrees of a miracle. It is a good question, why was there a difference? I don't really have a great answer for that. Why was there a difference between this time and less and the previous time? So I don't have a good answer for that, but I think we're onto something that it is to reinforce what happened before.
Absolutely.
And it's not just to reinforce, but as we go through this Sefer, as we go through this book of Yehoshua, we'll see that there are a lot of parallels between Yehoshua's leadership and Moshe's leadership, which is something which we highlighted in the first class. Then the first class, how did Yehoshua become the leader? It was because he followed Moshe around all the time to understand what it means to be a leader. And he was really, to be the leader, if you see Moshe as the greatest leader for the Jewish people, so he was just following that, and he tries to do a similar thing. He tries to repeat a lot of what Moshe did. And so we're going to see a lot of that. Obviously, this is coming from Hashem. This is not coming from Yehoshua. But Yehoshua, we had in the last chapter a repetition of the sending of the Meraglim, of sending of spies. And that was, we explained the differences between the two, why in the times of Moshe they were punished for it, and by Yehoshua they weren't. It was something positive. But that's also a similarity between the two, the sending of the spies. And we have this here. And this is really to reinforce not just that Hashem is going to protect us, but also that Yehoshua is also going to be the leader who will protect us. That he's telling this to them to say, listen, Hashem is doing what he did for Moshe, and he's doing it again. He's going to do another miracle again to show that we're heading in the right direction. I am your leader, and you should believe in me, and that Hashem will be able to take you out.
Hashem very specifically told Yeshua the same way I was with Moshe. I'll be with you.
Yeah, he says it explicitly here. He said it in Pasuk. It says it in verse 7. It says it exactly in verse 7. Hashem tells Yeshua that just like I was with Moshe, I will also be with you. And that gets repeated a lot throughout the Sefer. We'll see this.
Well, maybe Hashem made this miracle because they were in the desert for 40 years. And maybe some of the younger people weren't around at the Kriyas Yamsuf, and he wanted to just to say, like, you know, Yehoshua really is your leader. Look, I'm doing this miracle. You're going to go into the land of Israel, yeah, and you're going to be successful.
Yeah. In fact, they weren't around. All the entire generation over those 40 years, those that were 20 died. Those were of the age of 20 died. So those that were younger than 20, those are the ones that are around now. And so it's a very good point that Hashem's repeating it. I'm sure they've heard of the story, even if they weren't there, they heard of the story, or if they were there and they were young, and so they don't remember as much. But here they're repeating it to highlight that Hashem is still continuing to be with them. There's also a few differences between the two stories, besides for how the miracle took place. In the first story, it tells us that they required a significant amount of emunah, of belief in Hashem, in order to cross. In fact, this is based on Midrashim, that they were a bit hesitant to cross. And the first one to cross was a person by the name of Nachshon ben Aminadav. And when he crossed, he would walk into the water, and he kept on walking, and it was still water, even though Moshe told the Jewish people to walk, until it reached his neck. And then once it reached his neck, so then it split. And in fact, I believe other Midrashim say that it's not just once he reached his neck that it split, but as he was walking, only the water that was by him split. And that he had to, every single amount of water that was in front of him was still above his head until he would walk, and then it would split. And the reason why we have that picture is to show their emunah, their belief in Hashem, that they believed that there would be a miracle taking place. They had to step into it in order for the miracle to take place, which means they are risking their lives, right? As they take the next step, they are potentially risking their lives, showing that we believe that Hashem will save us, and that if there wasn't a God, then they would die. So they had full emunah, full belief in Hashem that He would make a miracle every step that they were taking, that the Yamsuf would split. That's what took place at the time originally. Over here, we don't have that discussion at all. And the reason for that, why is there a difference between at that time as opposed to this time? Any suggestions?
It was a test.
But also the Egyptians were not chasing them.
The Egyptians weren't chasing them, but why they could still be tested, that they have to, as they crossed the Jordan, they could still have some sort of test of faith.
That's right.
So, but they didn't have that test of faith this time. They only had it last time. So what was the difference between the two?
They had already seen the miracle at Sinai. And therefore they already believed.
Excellent. So I think the idea is that at the time, this is right after they left Mitzrayim. They left Egypt. And so this is a test of their faith. They had a few tests of faith, of emunah. One was the Korban Pesach, which we don't have to get into right now. But They were still becoming the Jewish people. It was still the very, very beginning. And so Hashem had to test them in terms of their real emunah, their real belief in Hashem at that time. We're now 40 years later, after they received the Torah, during those 40 years, they are essentially just in a certain state of holiness where they get food from Hashem, they get clothing, that tons of miracles happened in the desert.
And now it's stopped.
Now, at this point, it stopped. But they have that emunah. They have those 40 years of where they became the Jewish people over those 40 years. So that same test is not necessary. We don't need to have...
Was everyone tested, or just Nachshon was tested?
So it's a good question. I'm not sure. It could have been just Nachshon, but Nachshon represents... He was really representing the entire Jewish people by...
Which tribe was he from?
I forgot.
And it's Nachshon?
Nachshon.
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 What was his role?
I don't know what his role was. He represents the person who takes the first jump. He's the one who's able. He represents the person who's willing to take that first step. That everyone else is a follower, he's a leader. So he was able to lead them in. So that didn't take place here. That whole story didn't take place here. And a second difference between the two stories is that after after they had Kriyas Yamsuf, what did they do right afterwards?
They sang.
They had Az Yashir. They had a song. Moshe led them in song along with Miriam for the women. And they were singing and they were praising Hashem for what occurred. Over here, I'll just let you know, we'll read the end of the chapter and it's not going to discuss singing. They don't have any singing afterwards. It's not discussed at all.
They go into battle.
They basically, yeah, they continue on their way. So why was there no singing? Why did they sing in the same way that they were singing after the splitting of the sea by Kriyas Yamsuf?
Because they're not being saved now. They're going into
excellent.
Battle.
So one explanation that's given is because they're not being saved now. The big part of the miracle was that they were saved from the Egyptians who were running after them. Over here, we don't have an enemy at this point. Right, they're going on the offensive. They're not being attacked. And so therefore, the singing over there at the time was all about the fact that they were saved. It was about the miracle also, but it was about the fact that they were saved from the Egyptians. And so therefore, that is what caused them to have the singing.
But the song isn't in Hallel.
It's not in Hallel, but they were still singing.
Okay,
yeah, so they were singing. There is a second explanation that's given, which is to show the difference between Yehoshua and Moshe. And that Moshe, maybe they should have been singing, but Yehoshua was on a lower level than Moshe. Moshe realized that we should be singing, and Yehoshua, it was a fault of Yehoshua. There was a flaw of Yehoshua that he was not able to get the people to praise Hashem in song. So there is that suggestion. It's a different suggestion Moshe was able to get the Jewish people to sing. He realized that now is a time to stop and praise Hashem. And Yehoshua was just different, and he wasn't able to praise Hashem. He didn't remember to praise Hashem at that time.
But they've also had the stoppage now of the miracles in the desert.
Correct. Now
they don't have food being provided. The desert isn't clean before them. They have nasty things like snakes and scorpions or whatever, and they have to find their own food now. So that must be huge reasons to be careful.
No, for sure. That's for sure true. Yeah.
And why would they sing when this is happening?
Well, when you have such a miracle occur, so if you put yourself in their shoes and cross a river where all the water goes to one side, even though it's going to be a difficult time ahead and they're going to have to conquer the land and it's going to be very, you know, they're not going to have the same miracles that occurred in the desert, but it's still a time to sing.
Also, why haven't they seen that before, like these people?
Yeah, these people haven't even seen it.
Say again?
When have they seen that before, these people? You know, like, you have water pushed all the way to one side like that. Like, that's pretty crazy.
But if you're about to go into battle, you're probably anxious and you're not feeling...
I'm sure they're very anxious, yeah. I'm sure they're very anxious. Maybe that's similar to what you're saying. They are very anxious right now. It's a time where they're heading into battle. They're not just... As opposed to the Kriyas Yamsuf where they're saved and now they're calm.
But you yourself said that you could cross the Jordan. You didn't need the waters to pile up.
You didn't need it, but the fact that you have such a miracle, so then Hashem's showing you...
Okay, that's nice, but I could have done it anyway.
It's still a miracle that's being done. It's an open miracle.
But not saving them.
But it's not saving them. That was the first answer, that it's not really saving them. It's part of the first answer. It could be that's the reason, that it's because it wasn't necessary. They weren't being saved from an enemy. It could that's the first answer.
Thanks, God. It's pretty, but...
Okay, that's in terms of the differences between the two. I want to just try to quickly cover the rest of the chapter, and then we'll conclude. What are we up to here?
14.
Vayihi b'nsoa, this is verse 14, Yadalad, Vayihi b'nsoa am, me'o'aleim la'avor seradim v'akonim, nosei aron habris lefnei am. And it was that when they traveled and the Aaron was in front of them, verse 15, Kuvo nosei Aaron ad yardin, v'raglei ha'konim nosei Aaron nitbulu b'ksei ha'mayim, so then the feet of the Kohanim, they were touching the water, v'hayardin male al kol gedosav, kol yimei katsir. This is in verse 16, we're going to verse 16, v'yamdu ha'mayim ha'yardin milamala, komu ned achad, it would go to one side, Harchek meod me'adam ha'ir, asher mitzad sarsan, v'hayordim al yam ha'rava yam ha'melech, tamu nechrasu v'am avru neged Yericho. So the Jewish people, the water would come on one side. There would still be a flow of water, but it would all go on one side, and they would cross the Jordan. And finally, in verse 17, Vayamdu haKohanim Nosei Aron Bris Hashem b'Charava b'Socha Yarden, and the Kohanim would stand in the Yarden on the dry land Hachin. The Chol Yisrael Ovrim b'Charava Adasher Tamu Kol Hagoy Lavor Es Hayarden, and so the ark would stand on dry land while the Jews would cross over. So the Aron stayed there. It wasn't leading the way. It would stay on the dry land as the Jewish people would cross over.
The dry land, which was the bottom of the sea.
Yeah. The bottom of the sea, yeah, exactly. The bottom of the sea. Yeah. So just one more point. It says, if you go to verse 16, it says that they were far away from a place called Adam. Right, and the water was far away from Adam or at Adam. It was either near the city called Adam or far away from Adam, and
it's a place.
No problem. And
a great way off from the people.
But at the city of Adam.
Yeah.
Why was the city called Adam? What does Adam mean in Hebrew?
Man.
And so the Medrash tells us the man. What is it referring to? It's referring to Avram. Avram is the leader of the Jewish people. That Avram, it's trying to hint towards Avram, who's really the first Jew, who's with them as they are beginning to enter into the land of Israel. This is really a historical occasion here where they're entering the land of Israel with this miracle occurring, and it's as if Avram is there guiding them. This is the promise that was given to Avram. Hashem told Avram that your Jews would become servants in a foreign land, and then they will come back. And so this promise is being fulfilled as we speak, that they're going to come back into the land of Israel. And so Avram, it's as if Avram is there watching this miracle occur as they're coming back, and the promise is fully fulfilled. They left Egypt, and now as it's being fulfilled and they're entering into the land of Israel, it's as if the Adam, the person referring to Avram, is watching over and seeing this being fulfilled in front of his eyes, so to speak. Not that he's actually there, but it's so to speak as if he's present. That's the end of the chapter, and that's all about the, not the splitting of the sea, but moving the sea into one place.
Well, just to